You are now checked in to Stand Up New York Labs. Oh, yeah. Baby, 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 oh.
This is the Real Ass Podcast. Here's your host, Luis J. Gomez.
Welcome to the Real Ass Podcast. I'm your host, Luis J. Gomez, Puerto Rican rattlesnake, real ass dude himself. So many monikers. You know, I have a couple new ones, Jay.
I don't.
I have the ultimate minority.
What is that?
That's what Giannis Pappas called me on Ron and Fez a couple weeks ago. I have, obviously, the Joan Jett of comedy, you know.
Yeah, I made that one up.
You made that one? I thought Ron made that one up.
I thought I did. I'm pretty sure.
No, you said that about somebody else. Somebody tweeted that at me recently, that you called another comic the Joan Jett of comedy, like, years ago on Legion of Skanks.
I did?
Yeah.
Oh.
So, look, you did originally come up with it. It just wasn't for me. Look, this is a special edition of the podcast, or as we call them, Real Ass Podcast Exclusives, or RAPES for short. We're doing a one-on-one session with my very good friend, Big J. Okerson. I'm in your apartment, on your bed.
Mm-hmm. Lucky you.
I've already spilled weed ash.
I spilled water now.
Marijuana. Water. My son. There's a lot of things that have been on your bed today. I spilled my son all over your bed. No, but I'm happy to do this show with you, because we obviously, if you guys are a fan of this show, you probably have listened to Legion of Skanks, which we do together, and it's a little bit of a different feel. You know, Legion of Skanks is, you know, we get fucked up, we have people in the audience, it's, you know, 100 laughs a minute, it's just trying to, you know, outdo each other and go over the top and be filthy and crazy.
Have we reached 100 LPMs?
We have. We should get that,
the meter?
Yeah, that there's that software that guy developed. We should get it for Legion of Skanks.
Oh, I bet. I wonder if we could find it. I think you just get that, right?
We should challenge everybody else in the podcasting community
to get more LPMs.
To see who has more LPMs
in hour per hour.
I fucking guarantee we crush other people's LPMs.
But we gotta take an hour of podcast.
Yeah, we take a 1 hour sample. Not even that much. You take a 10 minute sample
for LPMs. Yeah, what if we have 10 minutes where it's just not, like...
The Sam Morrell episode? You take 10 minutes of Dave yapping about politics?
After he insulted me and shut me down? Let's not take the 10 minutes of that episode where...
Yeah, well, you're right. I guess it does matter, the episode. But I'll even put up the Sam Morrell episode, which was the worst episode of anything we've ever done.
If we get Sherrod and Curtin together, that's going to be a fucking...
A fire episode.
I mean, that's going to be so funny.
I hope so. Hopefully we're going to make that happen. But either way, you know Jay from Legion of Skanks. You know me from Legion of Skanks. But I wanted to actually sit down and have a little bit more of a real conversation with you, because we do this other show and it's not, you know, me and you, we're old school friends. We didn't just come together on a podcast. We've been friends for a really long time.
This ain't manufactured bullshit.
Well, no, it's, look, Legion of Skanks isn't manufactured bullshit. No. But the truth is, and this is, I think this is a very real thing, we're playing to a room as well as to the audience at home. And because we're playing to a room, you're not getting, typically, you're not going to get Jay, Lewis, or Dave when they have something fucking ranted going on in their lives. You're not going to get the down, angry.
It's funny. I think you can get that, but it's going to be met with, like, ball, you know what I mean?
Right. It's, well, the thing is, the whole point of that show, every minute of that show is to entertain and make an audience laugh.
It's a comedy show.
It's a comedy show that you wouldn't tune in to It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia one week to have a sad sack show.
But generally speaking, though, what I'm saying is not put on, though. Generally speaking, if we were on the road, me, you, and Dave in a hotel room, it's... Well, the serious conversation we have probably wouldn't be that interesting, but most of the time is going to be fun. If it's serious, it's more like an argument, generally.
Right.
And if it's, besides arguing, if the three of us were on the road or something in a room, it's generally funny.
So it's going to be...
We're not saying, like, let's be funny at all costs. I mean, like, if we're arguing about something, we'll argue. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think, well, look, but also, once again, I think you nailed it before. The point of the show is just to be funny. So that show is always going to be funny. Whereas Real Ass Podcast, it's funny in its own right, but it's a little little bit more of a serious conversation. And I think we can have more of a serious conversation on this show that we wouldn't be able to have on Legion of Skanks.
I do love that we have the same tattoo. That is fucking hilarious.
Which one? Oh, yeah, that one.
I mean, it's slightly different.
This is how close of friends we are. I was like, wait a minute, do we have multiple tattoos that are the same?
I bet we will at some point.
Well, I have to wait for, I think, three more fans to get the Legion of Skanks logo tattooed on my middle finger.
One more, because that couple's doing it.
Oh, Brian and...
Brian and Jessica.
Oh, shit. Well, one more. Guys, one more fan, get a Legion of Skanks tattoo. I'm going to take a video blog of me getting the logo tattooed on my middle finger, which is pretty badass. I know you're jealous.
Are you going to sweat the whole time?
It's going to be a fucking nightmare, dude. I'm not one of these guys. I'm not a phony who acts like it doesn't hurt, okay?
I don't either.
No, you're a little phony, okay?
I'm not phony at all.
Because here, lean into the mic a little bit more.
Here's
why you're a little phony, because I got the tattoo with you, and it's not... You acted like... Somebody was rubbing their finger down your side of your cheek, caressing your face.
That's
like
not true.
Like it was just a pleasant...
I told you it hurts.
Yeah, but if you thought it hurt, you would react more like it hurts.
But there's nothing like... It's like it's just getting done. It hurts.
So. I'm just saying, there's a little part of it that you're in a room with people watching you, and you're going like, oh, well, I'm not going to let on that I'm in any sort of physical pain right now. Because there's much more physical pain than there's letting on in your face. You didn't even fucking flinch. You
no,
didn't even...
There's no... When I got the stupid band on my arm, ugh, really awful. When I got that, it's so bad.
Jay has, literally the worst tattoo you can get. The one that they make a joke out of it now. He has a barbed wire tattoo around his arm.
With tribal.
With tribal interwoven. So not only does he was like, you know what, I don't want to just be a douchebag.
I would have
said
interwoven, but it might be the word.
But I want you to know that I also love Dave Matthews Band. I have a sensitive side.
Bro, let's get some red plastic cups and go fucking have some beers, man.
Is that your first tattoo?
No. This was the one I had my eye on for some time after I got...
You saw barbed wire in the movie theater, you're like, yo, I want to connect with Pamela Anderson even more.
I saw it on the wall when I went with somebody else to get tattooed. I was like, I want that one so
fucking
bad,
dude.
Yeah, you know, when I was younger, and you'll appreciate this to some degree, Vince Neil always had like a fucking barbed wire going around his arm. I thought I was going to be like Motley Crue. I thought I was going to be like the Crew.
By the way, I still to this day...
I only have one good tattoo.
Once I get enough money up, where I'm just like covered in tattoos, and I'm not going to just do it now, where it's going to be like, it'll be blatant, but I'm going to get Sebastian Bach's the Youth Gone Wild tattoo. It's like two boots that are on fire, and it says Youth Gone Wild. I just want to get the same tattoo. Is that gay? But I want to get the exact same tattoo as Sebastian Bach.
It says the words Youth Gone Wild.
Yeah, but it has like two boots on fire.
Oh, really?
As well.
That's hilarious.
It's kind of horrific, but I don't know, dude. It's a weird... Like, when I was a kid, I always thought that was a badass tattoo, so why not?
Because you're already not youth. It would have been a badass tattoo
with my hat
17.
On, it looks like I'm a youth gone wild. With my hat off, it looks like I'm an old man gone wild. But either way, I'm going wild.
I look like a college rapist gone wild.
Oh, man. So wait, what was your first tattoo?
The little tiny...
The word J,
the tiniest little...
They're
so tiny. Fat arm.
18-point
font.
Actually,
my giant, not so fat anymore.
An 18-point font.
Oh.
Did you get it because you didn't have enough money?
No. I got it because I was like, if my fucking mom sees it, she will fucking lose her shit.
If you're in a position where you have to hide a tattoo from your mom...
Don't get a tattoo.
Just don't get a tattoo.
Absolutely true.
You're just not, you know.
Absolutely true.
Which, by the way, that's what bugs me about Dave Smith, because he won't just admit that he kind of just would have to hide it from his mom. And that's the number one reason why it's never even gone past even a concept or an idea to ever do it. Because
do you think that's what it is?
Yeah, I think it's because he was raised in a somewhat, not religious, but it's a Jewish household where they don't get tattoos in their body.
Oh, I think that's so old school.
I know, I'm telling you right now, I fucking think it would be a problem. If Dave got a tattoo, I think his mom would be like, what the fuck? Like, that's a problem. And I think that's what would drive Dave not getting it to this day.
90% of what he said through his life, his mom would be like, what the fuck? I mean, he smoked weed and all that shit.
Yeah, but there's fucking proof. Like, at one point, she just looked at his arm, you know?
I guess.
And there's no payoff. But what I mean, though, is it would never get past the point of just an idea, because he would go, oh, I just wouldn't do that. It's not a thing that my family would do. It's not like religious reasons or whatever. But your mom would have freaked out on you.
She did. Oh, she called me 2 days later.
Did you call you a faggot for getting such a shitty tattoo?
Oh my god, no. But immediately I was like, if I'm gonna eat the shit for it, I might as well fucking...
Gotten a fucking spider web across your back. Just nonsense. Every, by the way, everyone had the idea. Everyone the wanted to get the elbow spider web tattoo.
I never did. I never liked it. And I'll tell you what. That's a tattoo I bet fucking hurts. Mm. I bet that hurts no shit.
Yeah.
Because all the points, to go back to what we were even saying, was the bottom of the band that goes around my arm. When the band that goes around my arm, when it gets like underneath the arm, that was like, again, it wasn't, I wasn't making noises, but it hurts on a level where you're like, I was like looking at the light because they had me laying back, and I was like, oh wow, that's like where it makes your body feel warm. You're like, am I gonna like pass out? Like it hurt, but I still don't like. I may have been sweating, but I'm not thinking about making a bunch of noise. I just like, it's like a pain you just kind of see coming. Like, what's to make noise about?
Fuck off, dude. It hurts like hell. I hate it. I love tattoos. I love the end result. And
those roses on your arm had to be
painful.
To be nightmarish.
Yeah, when it got into like the back, like that underskin area, it's the worst, dude. But the truth is, the payoff is worth it. And it's like
it's something you want, so that's why you get through it.
After I got my first tattoo, it was a Ludolf tattoo, which is now being covered up by this whole fucking garden of bones and flowers. But the first one I got, I was like, oh shit, that really fucking sucked. Why would I waste my time getting the word Ludolf tattooed into my arm? So now if I get a tattoo, because it's so painful, like, I will only get something that genuinely means something to me now. You know, when I was a kid, I would just get whatever tattooed on my body.
I really, man, like, when I start having like a little expendable money, I think it's like order of operations. Like, I'll probably get this redone. I get this big dumb thing, like something.
Yeah, it's fucking.
Just sharpen it up.
Yeah, it's gotta just get some detail on the faces and shit. Cause it gets lost what it is. It looks like a spider that got stepped on.
Yeah. And I'd get something on my whole upper arm to get all this covered up.
Let's do it, bro. Let's fucking do it. If we do a tour bus tour,
half sleeve.
Let's get fucking tattoos together. In each city, we'll fucking get more parts of a sleeve done. How cool would that be?
Just awful artists.
Terrible tattoo artists.
I've made this decision before.
No consistency.
Yeah, look at the symmetry on that hero I got done by a lesbian in Alaska. Like, the letters aren't even on the right line together.
Do not let a woman tattoo you. That's always...
So clearly she tattooed me like that. Like how my arm was.
You fucking dumb dyke.
You dumb muff muncher.
Alright, well, I'm glad you brought up expendable income, because I didn't know how else to bring up you fucking crying on that dude's podcast. Which I wanted to talk to you about. I don't even give a shit about you crying.
Well,
that's exactly it. And I appreciate you finally stepping out of yourself and not being the phony guy who pretends the tattoo doesn't hurt. And having a moment where you fucking let it all hang out. We busted your balls about it on the show.
Sure. Oh, dude, I said, and I don't know if I said this on Legion of Skanks or what, but I did say, when me and him were done with that podcast, where I cried on his podcast, he said to me when we were walking out, he goes, immediately, his first words at the podcast where he goes, dude, if you don't want me to put that out, like, I won't release that. And I go, are you kidding? I go, if one of my friends did that and then stifled it from ever being seen, like, I'd be angry at them. Like, why would you keep that from the world, dude? That's like, you're robbing comedy from people.
You are, but look, I mean, I would understand if you said at the end of it, like, you know what, dude, I don't want to fucking put it out there just for the sake of keeping it sexy. Now, I'm not, I've actually gone through a little weird transition in the past few months. I'm watching guys like you and Ari starting to get, like, getting your due. You know, and getting a little bit of stuff that you guys should have gotten a while ago. And it kind of re-energized me. Ari's fucking killing it right now. But it kind of re-energized me. And it kind of really re-put the idea of funny first in my mind. You know, and forget being sexy. Forget all that other bullshit. Forget how you look. Forget the image. Like, if it's funny first, you can always kind of fall back on that and go, I did my fucking job as a comic. I did my job as an entertainer, you know? So I think that's where you go, like, well, fuck this, dude. I kind of look dumb. I'm crying, and I probably shouldn't have cried. I know that this is going to turn into something way bigger than even the quote-unquote moment. It's going to be a couple weeks of hilarious content for you and your friends.
Right.
You know?
Oh, yeah. I knew it would be.
And so, like, oh, I respect that, but I wouldn't necessarily not respect the fact if you said, hey, dude, I don't want to fucking, I got caught up in a moment, started talking about this deal. People are also confused as to why you cried in that moment.
Right.
You know, people are like, oh, Jay's crying because the deal didn't go through. J-
Jay's no, beard. Yeah. Was that not explained? That's what I said. I've had to explain to a few people who said to me, they go, you know, like, you know, jokingly, be like, wah, my radio deal didn't go through. Goes, the radio deal's still in the process. It's not the issue. It's just I made a mistake that when I heard I was making X amount of dollars, we were kind of told at one point this was going to happen at a certain fee we were going to be paid. That to me was more than I'd ever gotten, like, guaranteed ever in comedy. Yeah.
Basically, the deal looked like it was going to go through, and it was more money than you've ever consistently made.
It wasn't a life changer, except for the money itself wasn't a life changer. It was for me because basically was saying, I'm going to make double what I make now, essentially. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, at least double. It's like an extra 100% of my income is guaranteed, and then now on top of what
you
else
go from being a guy who, you know, look, you live in a beautiful apartment, well, in a nice village. You're not she struggling.
She could be way worse.
Yeah, people. I mean, people are also
I have a daughter I take care of.
People gave you kind of a little bit of shit. It's like, oh, dude, but it's like, no, dude. When you go, like, I can go from being a guy who is, you know, who's doing okay to a guy who's doing well.
Exactly.
That's the difference, I think.
It is, and it's not just even, like, doing okay. It's like, exactly, it's like, I get through, and a lot of people have it way worse, and a lot of people get through by more of the skin of their teeth, but what I say on Brian Koppelman's podcast is, what's scary a little bit is being 37 and just getting to a point, at the end of the month, everything's paid. I pay a really pretty good amount of money back to my ex for my daughter, you know, and there's a car that I kind of take care of there. So that's, without disclosing too much, thousands a month. You know what I mean? Right. And then, you know, rent. I live here in the city and whatever. But again, so it's like, I pay everything. There's nothing where I'm like, well, I'm going to have to not pay that and wait till I get a notice. So everything's paid on time. It's just that when all that's done, I'm not sitting on money where it's like, right. Oh, let's book a vacation.
Well, I think a lot of the people that...
If I didn't have a credit card sometimes, at the end of a month, I couldn't book two flights. Does that make sense at all, what I'm saying? Like, and you're like, shit, man, I have to wait. I have a credit card. I got to put on a credit card. So I'm saying it's like, it seems like a weird gripe. But my point was just being, at 37, I was hoping I wouldn't be in that position. And what I did was, when I got the news, the first time that it came back, and they're like, you're going to be making X amount of dollars, I kind of went and told everybody that. And not like everyone in the world. Like, I didn't put it on
Facebook. Close friends and family.
I told close friends and family. And it's people that would like... More so the people who worry about me and something. You know, my mom's still at this point, like, my mom thinks I've made it, you know what I mean? Yeah. But at the same time, she's heard me, you know, it's my mom, so she's heard me gripe and complain, and she knows where my money's been at times and everything. So it was embarrassing to tell her one thing, and I mean, I also, what's funny, this is actually funny, though, I told the story with such, like, it was just telling a story. I remember, like, one night, I called my grandmother and my mom, I think my step-pop, and talked to them. And all, like, with this, like, long story goes, so, me and Dan Soder decided to start doing a podcast. I mean, I start from like that, and I get this point, goes, and then they came back with this offer, and we played hardball, and blah, 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 and now they've come back with
You're really Big J'd it. You're giving it the Big J treatment. Which, by the way, advice you gave me early on in my career when telling a story on stage is like, dude, just tell as many details as possible in the story, make sure you lay it all out, and you'll find the funny. So that's why you have these long stories, because you find these little funny tent poles throughout
all the minutiae,
so you really fucking give it a Big J story treatment.
Put
it
in a nice, put a real nice story. And I was even like, ooh, I wonder who I'm gonna be able to tell that again to next, like, that way.
You thought of other tags you could have used.
I should have said blah blah blah. So that's why I got emotional was like talking about that, where it's like that I had to go back and, like, you know, my mom's going like, so when are we going to start, you know, blah, 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 jokingly, almost like, you know, like, she didn't even say this, but the idea of like,
when are we going to Florida?
Yeah, right, exactly. Like the
when are you taking the family to Epcot?
It's so funny, but that's not my mom impression at all. My mom's like, yeah.
That's the way I imagine your mom talks when she's on the phone with you. Like an old
Hello.
Jewish mom. Hi, Jason.
Oh, is my baby boy having a good day? No, so it was just like that. So it was, you know, her wondering, like, kind of like, hey, are things going fantastic yet? And it's like, we don't even have the deal done yet. And
you completely honest with
her? We don't even have the deal done yet, and we don't, it's nowhere near where it was yet. You know what I mean? Again.
Were you completely honest with her, or did you kind of like...
What do you mean?
Did you just flat out say, like, ah, fuck, this all fell to shit, I shouldn't have said something to you, or were you just kind of like, oh, it's still negotiating, we'll see what happens?
No. I've told her the new money that's on the table and been like, yeah, they yanked away a nice big old fat chunk of that.
She started a GoFundMe page for you.
Indiegogo. Indiegogo, my boy. We got to go to Florida.
Oh, man.
So it came down just to that. Yeah, it's weird, man. Like, you know, it's the worst. And I say this, I hope. It's an interesting thing. I said after a couple weeks after that, I went on the road with Artie Lang, right? And you're looking at me like something's wrong.
I hate Artie Lang.
No, you love Artie Lang.
I love Artie Lang.
I love him too.
By the way, it's so funny. You've gotten really good at radio now because you know that you had to clarify that. Because some fucking stupid dickhead Reddit fan was going to go tweet at Artie Lang.
Shit. You hate Artie Lang.
Puerto Rican rattlesnake hates Artie Lang.
So, we love Artie Lang. And I really do. And I went on the road with him very recently. And I was even like, a little like, I was like, man, I don't know if going on the road with Artie is like a good idea. Because like, he can really make, what he shows me. I went to meet him in his apartment. His apartment is so beautiful. And he's such a fucking great guy. And I feel for him sometimes in certain levels. It's hard. But why he...
Like, if anybody should have stabbed himself in the stomach, it was you.
Well, no, I shouldn't. It's almost my point. Like, I shouldn't either. And sometimes I feel like a shithead, as people that listen to this will say. You know what I mean? It's like, fucking live in the East Village, and you pay all your bills and everything, and you know, so you're not, like, at the end of the month sitting on a bunch of extra cash. Like, go fuck yourself. Like, yeah, but absolutely.
But hold on. Can I also say, in response to the guys who do say that, because there's not an absolutely there. Because people don't understand. Like, a lot of people... I think our women a lot of times, I mean, not your chick because she's in the comedy industry, but my chick definitely, and definitely I hear girlfriends do this all the time, but it's like, yeah, we are at the end of the night going and working for 20 or 30 minutes or whatever we're doing, you know?
For pocket cash, essentially.
But the amount of effort and time that we put in order to get to that place where that's what we're getting to do for a living...
Mm-hmm.
Which is no walk in the park. We still have to audition, go to acting classes, write scripts, film shit. Like, there's all this other shit that we do that you guys don't get to see. You just hear the podcast or you see us performing at a comedy club. So it's easy to kind of go like, oh yeah, your life is pretty great. You're getting paid to do what you do. And so what? You're not sitting on a ton of cash. Dude, I've had to do everything to fucking get here. And I'm nowhere near where you're at. You know what I'm saying? But I've had to put in so much and sacrifice so much to do it, that this is starting to pay off now. And for you, at the end of it, you go like, fuck, dude, it's just not really paying off enough. Your daughter now is going to go to college soon. You know, you want to be able to say, no, dude, fucking boom, just going to pay for college.
Yeah.
You know, and that sucks that you're not able to just do that. Like, flat out, here's fucking $80,000, here's the college fund, just take it out of the bank account. Because the truth is, you are talented enough to do that. And I think that's what Koppelman was kind of trying to get across in a douchey way.
And I think it will happen ultimately at some point. But to go to the Artie thing though, to go back to what people will say about like the because I get to myself where I'm like, oh, like what kind of griping am I doing? Like, I'm sitting here, you know what I mean? Like I got PlayStation 4, you know what I mean? Like it's, you're just kind of like, I don't know. You get to this feeling where you're like, am I a dick in some way for even like griping about this shit? And then but it's something else, dude. It's something, I don't know if it's, I hate saying it's like it's the characters of a comic, because I think that's such a fucking cop-out sometime, but like, when I went to Artie's house, and you know, we took his SUV, you know, because we wouldn't all, there was too many of us to fit in his, you know, Mercedes, we took his Range Rover, you know what I mean?
That was just you and him.
It was just us. And his apartment is just...
ridiculous.
Beautiful. It's just a beautiful apartment, and the views are... I mean, I'm not going to give away at all where it is, but just like, it's, it was wow.
777 Central it's really, Park.
I mean, everyone knows he lives in Jersey. So it's like, it's just like, it's looking at New York. It's amazing. It's amazing. And when I went in there, and this is a guy I've known for years now, so I know his pain. I've read his books and I've talked to him extensively, you know? And you're just like, man, the scary part is the money is also like a destination goal for us all. You know what I mean? I want to do what I do and make this creative thing, and the beauty of it will be that I have money sitting there. And money is going to get rid of all of the fucking, you know, punching a wall in your house because you're like, fuck, you know, it's like, I just don't have enough to do what I want to do. You know what I mean? And he does have that money. Whatever he wants to do. If he wants to build a house, another house tomorrow, he can just do it. He has that kind of money. But it wasn't enough. It still, it didn't make it okay. You know what I mean? Like, and you almost hope. And I wonder, like I said, me and you had this conversation before. It's an interesting one, too. Because, you know, the famous Biggie Smalls and the Mo Money, Mo Problems.
Yeah.
And, you know, my man Puff always say Mo Money, Mo Problems. And Artie has a thing with that where it's like, I do kind of live by the belief that, like, money will sort out my problems and then I can do whatever it is I want to do. But maybe not. Like, maybe that still won't fill the fucking hole. So it's that constant, you know, that's the old hack line, but it's like it's constantly filling that hole. Pussy, drugs, whatever.
Well, if you know, look, I've talked to you and Dave about this a lot. You know, I for me, it's very Dave easy. Smith? Dave Smith, if you guys don't know him, Greg from the Legion of Saints podcast. That was so funny.
That's great.
On Reddit, somebody was like, you know, I love Jay. Gomez annoys the shit out of me. I could really do with or without Greg.
Greg.
Called him Greg. That Chris guy, he's all right, but but yeah, I mean, I'm the same way. I'm like, dude, all I need is just fucking money in the bank, and I think everything will kind of fall into place. But I've always had anger problems. I think when I was a kid, you know, I remember not being able to kind of get my fucking Lego castles together and starting to freak out and flip out, and that's not normal. That was like in me because I watched my mom, my dad probably fight when I was two. You know what I'm saying? There's some shit that's just like inherently in you. So I don't know that money would solve that. But I'll tell you, I'd be able to afford to see a therapist. I'd be able to afford to fucking, you know, do the things that I need to do in order to get myself to be in a place where I'm mentally kind of there. And but that might be taking a vacation four times a year. You know, and you'd kind of need money in order to kind of create the happiness in your life. And I feel like when you're just working, you're just grinding. Right now, I feel like I'm running a race and there's no finish line and there's no payoff. There's no person on the sideline giving me that cup of water. I'm just fucking dying.
Well, you
know?
Yes, but do you know what makes the kind of like the scary thing too? And this is a personality trait that I do believe I share. Is that when you start getting the money? So I'm just going to use just like, you know, made up numbers here. Yeah. So you go, everything's fucking works out, dude. It's like you have $200,000 in the bank and you're making. And these are from guys I know who had, like, you know, similar numbers to this, I'm sure. I don't know the exact numbers. But we'll say they're going to tell an Artie Lang where it's like in a weekend they're making five figures, right? So let's just say 30 grand, which may be lowballing it
for a weekend. Depending on where.
Depending on where and what time of their career and whatever, right? But both of them said at their peak, you're so afraid that you're still not going to have money that. Even though it looks like they spend money, it's like it's like David tells them to go buy clothes all the time. Artie Lang doesn't go buy clothes all the time. Like, they get, like, the big toys and the essentials they want. Like, you know, they want the big house. They want an apartment in the city, whatever it is. You know what I mean? They get those things. But Artie, I mean, the breakdown of, like, an Artie Lang even especially was, like, he's doing Stern, you know, 3-4 days a week they were doing it. And then he's on the fucking road. You know what I mean? Like, he leaves Howard Stern from waking up all week at 4 a.m. to go to work. To now he's on a plane going to fucking Utah to do a theater and then Colorado the next night to do a theater. And then he's going back and Monday morning he's at work. You know what I mean? Now everyone's like, that's why he can go build houses down the shore and all the shit. You know what I mean? But that said, it's like, when are you enjoying anything? Do you know what I'm saying? When's the money like, you got to have, and that's something that's inside. That's what I'm saying. It is. It all becomes part of like what's inside of you, like your makeup. Like, will money fix your problem? Is that the only problem? If it doesn't though, isn't the idea of that kind of scary? It's almost like a long form description of why people self sabotage because they're afraid to actually succeed, which does happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I think
if you succeed, you're like, if you're successful, you're like, what the fuck am I now?
I mean, look, I've watched you specifically. I think it's the trait that you and Dave have a little bit more than I do.
We have a lot of things in common. Sure.
You know, I think that you guys do have a little bit of a self sabotaging thing. I watch you kind of climb out of it. I remember watching you. As a young comic, it's so funny because I think back now when I met you, you were doing comedy substantially less time than I'm doing comedy now.
You met me doing it about 6 years, 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, you were like a fucking, dude, 5 or 6 years in comedy. When I meet somebody who's doing comedy 5 years, they are a fucking child. You know what I'm saying? It's so funny. Sure. They are a kid in this thing. You know
even
what I'm saying?
Isn't it weird though? Even if they're 40.
Yeah, that's it. You're a fucking young buck in this. You're really describing Mike Vecchione, but that's the only
example. Well, Mike Vecchione was a good example. Mike Fenoy is not a bad example of that. These are guys who started it. Mike started doing comedy at like 29. Same age as Mike Vecchione. 29 starting it.
Yeah, man. That's
a tough road, man. It's a real difficult road because when you
at least to break into the scene, youth is your weapon. Absolutely true.
Yeah, 100%.
Everywhere I went, you know, when I was doing the black shows, it was, I did the New Jack spots. I remember being called that. And then, you know, young comedians, fresh faces, everything's new, you know, new faces at Montreal, all those things you want to get, you know, is like these, it all involves like youth and finding
well, yeah, now that
youth.
Now I'm fucking going, now that's funny because now I have a kid and I'm going through that weird conundrum because I go like, well, everything that I want to write is about being a dad and about like my life that I'm experiencing and the real shit. But I know that that's not sexy to Comedy Central's hot list. It's not sexy to Montreal's new faces. They don't really, that's not what they're looking for.
But it's also about things. What's in front of you. So that's the kind of thing too. So when you're fresh faces and new faces, if you're a fucking, so I don't even know if it's so much self-sabotaging, but where I wasn't very like, I had a kid very young, you know? So it's like, well, I wasn't super prolific at all. I just did stand-up comedy and I did work hard.
Here's where you're self-sabotaging.
I did work hard to get on the road.
I
wanted
watched
to go on the road
you,
and do comedy.
I watched you do things like not do Conan when they wanted you because you were like, I don't feel like fucking putting together the tape. And it was, I think it was literally, it wasn't so much that you didn't want to, you had this moral stance against it, but you almost weirdly tried to angle it like you were like, fuck, if they want me, they want me. But in reality, think back how young of a comic you were, and to have that kind of like attitude, you're like, no, in reality, no. You had to play the game, and you ended up playing the game, and you got on Fallon, and you did what you had to do to get there, and you could have probably...
I wish I could take more credit for that, man, but that was Jeff Singer, man. God bless
him. He really wanted you.
Jeff Singer just goes, I'm going to put you on late night television. And it was 5 months.
But in fact, you don't think that was you being a little bit self-sabotaging, not doing it super early in your career? You had Montreal in 5 years. You had TV credits. You were in the cellar.
I don't know how much of it is that, although there's definitely, I'm lying if I say there isn't a part of that just flat out goes, okay, what if I go to, here's the thing, in the world I roam, right? Where I dwell, basically, you know, at the comedy clubs, on the road, headlining shows, showcases, festivals, that kind of stuff. In that world, like, I'm looked at... Like, I think I had a soft story to close that Ari show at South by Southwest this last week.
Okay.
So I was a little sad. That funny story to me.
What story?
I didn't connect with the crowd. I told a story about going to Sacramento, and I was doing the punchline, and Kev was at the Argo Arena performing, and we met up in the afternoon at his hotel, and just how it bummed me out. But on the way to the hotel, I'll paraphrase the story, but on the way to the hotel, because it's still funny, the cab driver was so excited that I was going to see Kevin Hart, because I told him, cause he was asking me why am I going from a hotel to another hotel, the cab driver, and I'm like, oh, well, I'm performing at the punchline all weekend, and my friend Kevin Hart's in town, he knew that, but then he started asking me questions about me being a comedian. And I asked if he can get tickets to a show. And I was like, sure, just tell me what show. And he's like, is there more than one? I thought it's only tonight. I go, no, I just told you I'm here for like 7 shows. You know, I'm doing like a Monday through Sunday or a Wednesday through Sunday. And he goes, oh, no, I meant Kevin Hart tickets.
No.
Yeah, which hurt. And then we had an awkward thing. I was like, no, I don't have them. And then he dropped me off. But he gave me a card and told me.
I was actually hoping you'd get me Kevin Hart tickets. That's why I was pumped.
When I was done, he goes, when you're done, call me because it's hard to get a cab out here. So I went and hung out with Kev while he did his thing, you know what I mean? His fucking...
I just imagine him having his fucking feet shampooed.
Without exaggeration, I'm just shy of that. It was like his boys were all playing video games on an Xbox they buy when he goes to town, and then they just leave it for the... He told me that, you know what I mean?
That's like, pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's so bad. And then he's like, you know, you want lobster, there's like lobster sitting there, and it's just so weird, man. No, I feel like you're...
No, I'm with you, man.
And so I kind of left almost in like a, I gotta go, like this is too, you know what I mean? Like it's just bumming me out how fucking good Grady's doing. And by the way, this is going back a couple years where I was, you know, it was a big, big deal that I was headlining the Sacramento Punchline.
Right.
So it's like immediately my good feeling of headlining this A comedy club is like just nailed by like Kev.
No, just for the fans that don't know, Jay started with Kev.
Oh yes, yeah, me and Kev.
In Philly, sure. You know, Big Jay, it was Big Jay and Lil Kev. I mean, you guys were... Short of a comedy duo, you guys would have
traveled around a lot. Yeah,
you travel around together
and to colleges and whatever we could do. You know, whatever kind of black gigs we can get, which is the truth. It was all black gigs, but and he's doing great. You know, so I left kind of like in almost like a panic attack. You kind of like, hey man, I love you. It was great seeing you. I got to get back to my. You know, I made up some. I have to go now, after like an hour. You know, and I called the guy, the cab driver. I never told you this, really. This is a great story.
I feel like I've heard parts of it.
I called this cab driver and I get in the car with him right away. And he's like, how was it?
And I even kind of give him, like, yeah, I know him. It's not like, you know what I mean?
So you're getting shitty with the cab driver?
No, no, I just said, no, I said, no, I wasn't shitty. I was like, it was fine. I go, I know him, though. It's not like I'm excited. I was like, I'm just happy, you know, it's catching up with an old buddy. And he goes, yeah. And then right away, he goes, by the way, man, he goes, that came off weird earlier. He goes, I know, like, he goes, by the way, I'd love to see your show. If that's still on the table, I'd like to, like, do that. Because it comes to your show. I bring my girl. He goes, she'll be impressed, you know, because I can say I know
a guy that knows Kevin Hart.
She goes,
he has to apologize to the guy's like, dude, I'm sorry.
I keep doing this. So he goes, I'd love to come on your shows, Vince. Okay. And I was like, that's absolutely cool, man. Yeah. I was like, no problem. I go, I'll get your info before I get out of the cab. And then you come to a show, it'll be good. Yeah. You know what I mean? No problem. I was doing 7 shows or whatever. So I'm like, you're anyone you want to come to. I'm like, I'm giving them, like, the weekends are better. You know, the late shows on Friday, Saturday are more fun and blah, blah. He's like, cool, man. Yeah, I'll do that. And then he starts even telling me his schedule for work. He's like, I think I work tonight. I have to go work through tonight. But I think Friday or Saturday, one of those two, I'm off. I go, cool, man, great. And we get, it's like a 30-minute drive almost back to my hotel. And we pull up to the hotel. And I'm getting out of the car. And I go, dude, by the way, I go, give me your info. And I'll put you down. Let me know what night you want to come. And I'll give you my number and stuff like that. And he just turns around. He goes, dude, I'm going to be honest. I'm not going to come. And then I was like, why did you even build me back up for that?
Why are you doing this?
And like Kev called him and said, he goes, listen, I'm going to hurt this guy's feelings some more.
Oh, that's fucking hilarious, dude.
Yeah, it's great. I love that story. But I think I told it soft at South
Park. So what you were saying, though... Because that you brought up telling that soft because I was saying that you've self-sabotaging. You just want to tell me how you did a soft story for no reason.
No, self-sabotaging. Oh, no. I know. So it's like when I do those, I felt like it was soft because Ari puts me last with this confidence of a thing, and I have the confidence to do it too in that world. But so it's like I bet. Like, my own insecurity, like, now, as I think about it more and more, I'm going to text Ari. I'm like, that was cool, right? The story, like, it went well. Was it all right? Unfortunately, I think he's going to probably fuck with me and say, like, it was terrible or something. I guess that's what he'll do. But, like, it's, like, not meeting expectations. But that was at least just in the realm of, like, a show at a festival. So, at the end of the day, a couple hundred people saw it. If they do think it was soft, whatever, you know?
Right.
But Comedy Central saw and stuff like that. So it's the same thing. It's like the self-sabotage where it's like, if I go on Conan, it's the same way I felt during Fallon. I was happy that I got Fallon the way it got to go. Because my thing is, if I go on Conan, in the world that I dominate, where the young comics look up to me and comics that are my peers respect me and comics who are people who have been doing it longer than me and have far more success than me are like, dude, like, you know, I get a lot of love in that world. Like, what if I go on Conan and it's just whatever? Do you get what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, but I mean, welcome to everybody. That's being a comic.
Absolutely. But I've been able to kind of like, quote unquote, these are all sound like fucking corny, cocky terms, but I'm very confident I could do well or be one of the better people on every show I do. Live stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
If you throw me into an all-black show, I'm sure I'll be able to make something happen. You know what I mean? Like, I just feel like that kind of confidence. And I'm very confident in the funny human being that I am, that I can make a situation funny. That's why with radio, it's always when they want me to do jokes, I'm like, just whatever you're talking about, man, let's just go. I'll talk. We'll make it funny. I don't have concerns about that. But it's like if you try something bigger than you, like all you can do is fail. The impressive thing to me about Kev is like he looks like he's supposed to be everywhere he goes. None of it throws him. Do you know what I mean? Like at least outwardly, maybe in his own world, I'm sure he's got some kind of like, you know. But I don't know, man. Knowing his personality, he's always been forward. He goes, if a year into comedy, they told Kev, in fact, they did. A year into comedy, they told Kev, you're the star of a movie. Paper Soldiers, this Jay-Z produced, Rockefeller Records produced movie. Terrible. But he just he didn't even think, he's mixing it up with Jay-Z and Damon Dash every day.
Well, you watch the guys that can do that. And you look at like Pete Davidson. I'm watching Pete, like as a 19-year-old kid, to handle. Forget pressure, dude. I mean, I think of the type of pressure that I felt in these.
By the way. I heard he destroyed.
I heard he annihilated. Yeah. But the type of pressure that I felt in my career when I've gone up at the Comedy Cellar for the first time, or auditioning for Montreal, or getting to do Last Comic Standing. These are such minuscule little things compared to the type of pressure this 19-year-old kid who, I mean, I guess he's 21 now, but the type of things that he's had to face as a young comedian. And I think it does take a certain personality type and a certain type of person that can handle it and not just freak the fuck out. So I don't think people even realize how good somebody like Pete Davidson is
to be able to be
in that position and kill. Not only just do well, but I'm watching Dave Attell and him write roast jokes. And if I was sitting with Dave Attell and presenting my jokes to Dave Attell to write, I would be so insecure.
He's
going to
think these are so lame and he's going to hate
them. Dude, oh my God. When Attell's in the room, and like I've gotten somewhat, I don't want to say close to Attell, but I've gotten like closer to Attell working at the Cellar, and I've done his show at the Underground. I'm doing it again next week. And, you know, we do that thing where we go on stage together. This is going to be my fourth time going on stage with Dave Attell, going back and forth, doing jokes and riffing with each other on stage at the same time. And I'm terrified still, and I'm a 32-year-old man with a son who's had a lot of life experience, and I've been doing comedy for a decade. So the fact that Pete has been doing it half as much time, has half the life experience, and he's able to go into these situations and fucking annihilate is amazing.
When I watched him, it doesn't even have to, there's no secret to be made about it. Like, when we watch things, I shouldn't speak for everybody, I guess, but me, like, when I watch Pete on SNL, like, I'm definitely not rooting for him to not get the job or keep the job or anything like that, if it makes sense. Mm-hmm. But on this first time where they let the spotlight shine on him, you're like, you kind of want to see it go a little rough. A party's going to go a little rough. So you want to see it's like, oh, there you go, motherfucker. It ain't so easy now, is it?
Well, you want to see these guys. We all root for the underdog. And at this point, you know, they'll sell Pete as the underdog because his dad died in 9/11. He's a young kid, but he's just not the underdog. No. He's the kid who's rolling. Michael Che is the guy who's rolling. Dan Soder's the guy who's rolling. So you, me, Dave Smith, we're underdogs. Like, in reality, that's just the truth.
But
nobody's rooting for me.
No, that's not true at all. But as I was saying, though, when I watched Pete, like, the compliment I paid Pete the next day, and I meant it. He did a stand-up joke, and that's fine. You know, it's nothing about the material. As a comic, that's going to blow you away. What I just told him the next day, I was like, dude, I'm super proud of you because you just looked like you belong there, dude. He did not look shaken by it, and they put the spotlight right on him in that weird setting. It was his first episode
ever.
First
time anybody doing something like that.
First episode ever on his thing. It was fucking super edgy, which would have made me more comfortable doing something where I could, like, play with that kind of material.
Yeah,
like,
let's also, if it's your material, I think it takes a little bit, especially material. You think about it in any situation when you're, and you don't do material now. And I think you're more comfortable in the crowd work. You lean on crowd work the same way that we lean on material, which is like, I know I could always lean on my jokes and they'll always do what they'll do. You know, I'm always going to be able to talk to the chick up front and make something funny out of that.
If my jokes are like, if they're just not catching with my jokes.
So whatever it is. So it's just, it's a weird thing to kind of like lean on in a different way.
I just think the way he delivered it, that first thing, and his pausing and his timing was fucking great. And for a 19-year-old kid, yeah, exactly. It's like, at 19, if I was thrust in that position at all, I just don't know if I would have done well at it.
You couldn't handle working at a video store.
It's true. A CD store.
Whatever.
I handled it. I just, man, robbed them blind. Robbed
You
them.
Couldn't handle the temptation of robbing the CD
You're
store.
You're right. If I would have gotten SNL then, I would have robbed everyone on the show. Hey, you know that new kid is robbing everybody when we fall asleep?
That kid Jay Oakerson.
You know the new guy from Weekend Update? He stole all my CDs. It's always CD robbery.
Dude, he went into Lorne Michaels' office and stole his Grammy.
They used to tell us if we get copies, any CD you want that was new, the stealing the used ones were the easiest thing in the world.
Yeah.
The new, when you got a new, they'd always tell you, goes, if it's like a popular new thing coming. I remember this is how I got, ironically, since we just did the thing with them, the cruise ship. I got chocolate starfish and the
hot dog flavored water.
Hot dog flavored water. That's what it was.
Duh. Just think about what it tastes like.
Chocolate starfish and the hot dog flavored water. I got that because you were allowed to open up one of every like mass release like that to like
play in the store.
And then I would just do it. And I'd play in the store and then I would just walk the fuck out when it was over. And then if the next shift came in and they were like, oh, nobody. Oh, let's put, and then just open another one. Then the count's off, and then who gives a shit?
some other 20-year-old douchebag is like, dude, I fucking lost count of thing. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, gives a shit.
You guys want to smoke weed?
I don't even know about weed back then. Thank God I didn't. If I had learned about weed in high school,
you might not have done comedy.
It's Very possible. Yeah. Or I would have been on Saturday Night Live at 19.
God damn it, dude. By the way, you could have... I say this all the time on Legion, but you have great impressions. I think
I'm starting to learn that now.
If you were committed as a young man, you could have done that, dude. I think it's too... You're not black or a woman, so you're not going to get on as an old person now.
Man, you got to see it. Oh, man. We should have done this yesterday when we were all together, but... you got to see me and Soder do Pete Davis and Ricky Velez together. Oh, my Ricky Velez great. Is great.
Dude, they both...
Have you seen Ricky Velez?
Can I tell you my problem with both of those guys? Not even my... I'll say it to their faces. I've said it to Pete. Both
of those guys... own more sneakers than you've ever had in your entire life.
They have more sneakers than I have possessions in terms of net worth.
And it's worth more money.
Fucking ridiculous. No, both of those guys... They walk into a room like they're fucking like frantically worried, and you're like, oh my god, what's going on? Did you lose your wallet? They're like worried about not being able to handle the amount of meetings they have that day. And I'm like, dude, I'm gonna punch you in your fucking teenage faces. Don't give me that's your biggest problem is you can't fit enough meetings in today, you cunts.
Ricky Velez made me laugh. Here's another funny thing that was so hilarious. I was on a flight, to Austin, Texas for South by the other day, and it was a nighttime flight.
All right, Jay, you said it five times. We get it. You did South by.
I was on a nighttime flight on JetBlue, so I had TV, Comedy Central. I'm bragging about everything now. Yeah, I was in the bulkhead and I was watching TV with my Beats headphones. I was watching at midnight and Ricky Velez, and the same feelings. You're like, oh, here goes Ricky in a situation where I guess at midnight you don't think on your feet. It turns out, but it looks like you're supposed to.
Yeah.
Be thinking on your feet. But I'm like, and Ricky, is Ricky Jesse Joyce and a girl? I don't know. I'm sure she's known. I just don't recall who it was.
Amy Schumer.
Amy something. No, it was this girl, Ricky Velez, and Jesse Joyce. Jesse Joyce is a writer. So a show like that, I believe, falls right into his, like, strength.
Jesse should be able to fucking smash
just
on that
his
show.
Strength. And I don't know how the show worked. It was the first time I've watched the show. No bullshit. And it seemed like
people love that show.
There seemed like there's no, I'm going to do it. There's no, I'm doing it soon. There's no rhyme or reason to it. I think I'm doing it with Nate. There's no rhyme or reason to it. The point system, it seems, other than something happens and the Chris Hardwick goes, points, and they just put some amount of points on them. It doesn't look like it was the same amount even every time. Anyway, the point is you're like, oh, well, Jesse's going
to
like...
Maybe. It's like, have you ever gone to like get a sandwich in like a black deli? There's no rhyme or reason to what they charge for. Like,
yeah, yeah. It's 50 cents for a pickle. Yes. I get mayonnaise for a buck. But I'm like, so I go, Jesse will give Ricky a little knocking around. Like, this is probably where it will not be Ricky's strength at all. And I said, because there's no rhyme or reason to the points, I'm not exaggerating when I tell you this. The girl was out. Jesse Joyce had 4,000 some points, and Ricky was at 16,000 and 400 and something. I don't even tell him. I go, and by the way,
he ran into the other room. He was like, I don't know what to do with all these points. Life is so hard.
Can you give Jesse some of my points? Yo, I went on at midnight. Yo, I gave Jesse Joyce some of my points. That shit was dope.
That
shit was dope.
They gave me so many points, I didn't even know what to do with them.
Yo, kid, me and Pete Davidson was out here, and we went on at midnight. Yo, that shit was dope.
Well, I love Ricky and I love Pete.
Of course.
I text Pete weekly. He's a friend of mine.
Oh, yeah. No, we got a date with fucking NBA 2K15 Destiny. Me and Pete Davidson. And Crouton. He loves my croutons. I listen, no bullshit. This is all things I would say right to him because it's nothing. My point is saying that the 37-year-old, 17-year comedy veteran, curmudgeon, goes like, let's let these little whippersnappers get thrown in the beer ring with the big boys and see what happens. And they just flourish every time. So it's like, it's all complimentary. Like, anything I think is like, any negativity I even have on them is just, it's ill-placed and wrong. It's all like, they're like, no, these guys got...
And they're also, here's the funny part. Then what happens is
they're super sweet kids.
And and same thing like guys like Michael Che, Dan Soder.
You cannot root for these guys.
They're so nice and they're so likable that it's like, it goes hand in hand. It's not a coincidence that they're getting all this shit. And then you go, I can't root against those guys. I said there's a difference because I think I am likable. I think I give myself shit sometimes and I say I'm not likable. I am likable. But there's a difference between being likable and being likable enough to where, no, somebody wants to be your friend. And that's the difference. People don't want to be my friend. People would have me come over and play cards with them and drink and smoke weed. They don't want to be my friend. They don't want me to be in their world. They don't want me to come to Thanksgiving. But Michael Che, Pete Davidson, that little fucking weed head degenerate, Dan Soder, they want them. I think you too, man.
I want you at my Thanksgiving.
Yeah, but you're a psychopath. And that's why I think you haven't made it, because you accept people like me at the Thanksgiving dinner table. You'd be completely out there if you fucking would just stop being friends with people like me and Dave.
Mix it up with the big wigs.
Which you were hanging out with Sal Volcano last night. Smart move. Smart move.
What? Hang out with Sal?
Hang out with Sal.
I hang with him a lot, dude. That is a relationship that I find so interesting. For one, I think he's an interesting guy. I think, I mean, one of the sweetest guys. I'm super intrigued by his fucking, his comedy, simply. I mean, like, what they do, that Impressive Joker show. And what I love is, like, he just fucking knows comedy, man. He's a real fan. So he's a fan of ours. You know what I mean? He's a fan of mine.
We should submit, as Legion of Skanks, submit to write, we should submit, like, a spec script for an episode for them and see if they would do it.
He'll look at it for sure.
I know they'd look at it. How cool would it be if they, like, brought us on as, like, a specialty fucking... We should do that.
Tell them what to say. We gotta do an uncensored one. So make them do, like, skank shit.
Punch her in the cunt. Now.
Yes. All right, welcome to that girl. Pull her panties down. Put your hand inside of her.
Whisper in her ear, you're going to kill her family.
He's got his hand inside her, and you go, now call her a whore. And he looks at the camera and goes, no. Sorry, man, you have a good day. That's when he bails.
You're on a prank show. See the camera right there?
You're on a prank show. It's, everyone's here. Sorry, guys, come out.
We got to wrap here in like 10 minutes, but I want to talk to you about this and get your thoughts on it. You see they're doing a Patrice documentary?
Yeah. Yeah.
What was that? Did you give me your acting class every reaction possible to it?
Yeah, I don't know. Not every reaction possible. Yeah, I know there are.
What do you think? It's Farrelly Brothers, guys who did Z-Rock. Not Farrelly Brothers. Those guys are huge.
Those guys are. Mark
Farrell. That's what Mark I meant. Farrell. Who did Z-Rock? Who knew Patrice through that experience? And then
I love Farrell.
Vaughn, his ex-wife. Is I guess involved. I saw the Indiegogo campaign. Do you not want to comment on this?
No. Okay.
Okay. You seem like you don't want to talk about it. It's real as fuck. Yes. We only get like. I'm not gonna say it, but he listens. I don't want to be too rude.
I'm curious to see what they're gonna do actually with it.
Yeah. I mean, look. I watched one. I watched a Patrice O'Neal documentary.
A fan-made one
when James...
That's just clips, though.
When James was born. On the day he was born, his birthday.
But it's just
in the hospital
of
Patrice. Yeah, it's just clips, and they just basically, you know... But they have interviews, they have people talking about him, but not after his death, not posthumous.
Yeah.
Posthumous. Whatever.
That's a good word, though.
Yeah, it is a good word.
Posthumous.
Posthumous?
That's what he said, yeah.
I thought it was posthumous.
No.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay. Dude, I think Patrice O'Neal, and I've said this before, in my opinion, the funniest person to ever live. I didn't fucking know him like you guys knew him. I was too young of a comic. I was too intimidated by Patrice to even approach having a legitimate conversation with him, you know? But, I'm a genuine fucking fan. So as a fan, I go like, fuck, dude, I would love to see it. But just like, I see people on Reddit, they're talking about it. It's like, oh, is it going to be fucking, you know, is this like an official thing? I don't know. I mean, is this like...
How dramatic is the story?
What about Patrice? How dramatic is the story? It's pretty dramatic. His story?
Yeah.
I think he's got a crazy story. Everything, dude. Everything from him fucking just is like getting arrested when he was younger to fucking the way he got into comedy was the dude who was just heckling.
Is that
going to
be a
dude.
Big thing? This thing?
I don't know, dude. If
or,
you
or,
did,
or,
if,
or is it just going to be like, wasn't he a great comic?
I don't know. If you told the whole Patrice O'Neal story, I think it'd be a really interesting thing to hear. I don't know, dude. Like, as a fan, I go like, I want to, as much as possible. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want more. I want to see, like, fucking never before seen
Me
footage.
Too,
I want
to
see...
Yeah, I'd love to see that, like, a real... But I think it's been done. People putting out, like, you know, good chunks. It'd be nice to have it professionally done. Somebody putting chunks of his career together. The story itself... I mean, it depends who's telling it, I guess. Like his story. I don't know how it's going to be done. To be honest with you, I don't know what they. If it's going to be a tribute or if it's going to be an honest thing, I'm very curious to see. I mean, look. I mean, he had so much more to do. You know what I mean? I mean that he just had like a lot more to fucking do. I mean, his roast, Charlie Sheen roast, is just like, it was just different from anyone else's roast, at all. Like his delivery of it, the way he did it. Which is like something else. So it's, I don't know. I don't know. My instinct with this documentary is like not enjoying that it's being done, but like I can't even really pinpoint the reasons why.
Yeah, look, I like I said, I'm not really connected to that world.
I don't know the play. I feel like it's a documentary, not where it's like the people who love him. And I know some people who love him are involved. I'm not arguing that. But I'm saying, like, I don't know, though, if this is, like, a thing really backed by people who, like, love. Do you get what I'm saying? Yeah. This is a thing where it's like Bobby Kelly and Voss and maybe even me, but we'll say on a bigger scale, Norton and the Opie Anthony guys and all that stuff. You know what I mean? Like, they go, we're going to make this thing a fucking, and tell a story and tell the shitty parts and the gritty stuff and the bad things about them and the good, you know what I mean?
Well, you get some of the comics that hated Patrice. That's an interesting...
Sure, but Patrice is an interesting guy and he's done some fucking foul shit. And, you know, like, he is a guy, what I get from him, look, I'm in the process of getting divorced and that'll happen soon and me and my ex are on very good terms and everything. But if she went hunting now, even very recently, the fact that me and her, like, emotionally removed from, like, a relationship of, like, you know, being in love with each other, mm-hmm. and now when I step away from it, as a comic, I don't even think she'd have a problem with understanding that, like, especially as I speak about myself as the villain in these stories, but I'm pretty out there and open now where it's like, yeah, here's, like, all the scumbaggery I was involved in during those years.
Even, you know, during, I mean, the years we were together.
So if she wanted to do a very short hunt, she could find me on podcast telling stories about, oh man, like 7 years ago, you know, whatever, me and Dave with that chick. And
it's
the
so
girl.
Funny because
because at this point, I go, what am I going to do? I go, those are things in my life that were so. But again, to kind of go back to what we were even saying though about like self sabotaging and misdirected thing, I said I had a kid very young, and also like my life experiences that would be the things you would talk about as a comic. That you want to get into and mix it up and talk about, like, you know, your fucking weird sexual things that are happening, or relationships or dating or being involved in whatever kind of thing it is. Most of those things I couldn't even talk about.
Well, I'm going to get caught.
I was double lives.
If you listen back to old Legion of Skanks episodes, I mean, we've had, you don't even know the Legion of Skanks episodes. We've had to edit. You've said shit where you've like, you're like, oh, we got to edit that out.
Yeah, I would have
got caught doing some shit. You completely altered stories. To where they weren't good
Dave
stories
Smith
anymore.
Raped that girl. I was simply watching.
Dude, do you remember that time Louis Anderson had a threesome with two black strippers? I heard it was crazy.
It felt, I mean, looked great.
But I mean, it's kind of funny when you're leading that type of life. You know, you really can't be completely honest. I mean, that's kind of a. That's, I mean, look, you talk about posthumous, like, if I think the Big J story, after you die, I think you could have a great fucking...
Well, you know, Patrice had a thing, and then Patrice, weirdly enough, and it's weird, it's a weird sinking that was not of our lives, that it wasn't even done necessarily on purpose, but again, I'm not super tight with Yvonne, but she was a girl, in being close to Patrice, he was very publicly vocal about, like, her fucking with chicks, and they'd go to Brazil together and fuck chicks together. You know what I mean? Like, all this stuff that, like, it was like she became the kind of chick where it's like he didn't really have to bullshit in his life anymore. And he could be open and honest with everything. It's like, and then Christine, Christine did a whole Ari Shaffir podcast talking about the shit we do. So it's like, it's cool to have a girl who puts it out there. So it's like, now my goofy stories, like, I just tell them if I have a new one, you know what I mean? Then it's like, what to tell? I mean, I'd leave out names and stuff for, that's not a cool thing to do.
Well, it gives you a lot more freedom when you have, like, an honest relationship and you have that type of...
Yeah, there's a story, I could have a story about Christine saying no because I could text her or call her from, you know, I'm in Seattle and some girl saying she wants to blow me. I go, I can at least... field the phone call and be like, hey, it's going, by the way, 99 times out of 100 probably she's gonna be like, no, I'm not there, you're not, blah blah blah, but you know what I mean? But at least, like, it's a world where it's like,
would she ever say yes? Some chick could just blow you in Seattle.
Maybe yeah.
Oh, that'd be great. That's what you gotta beat her down to the point where she'll
no
fucking...
beating down, this is her.
You gotta fucking brainwash her to the point where she'll let you.
But if you do
fuck
stuff,
other
but
chicks on
even
the road.
The stuff we do, if you do the stuff we do, you have to, like, you know what it was? It definitely, you're not looking for. There's a big thing about difference between being like a whory chick, right? I do believe this, and being someone like, if you're being a whory chick because you're searching for an emotional thing in somebody, do you know what I mean? Versus
you're trying to get off.
Huh?
Versus you're just trying to
versus,
get off.
Versus just doing a thing where you're saying it's like you've witnessed each other doing a thing where it's like if it's like another girl comes into our thing, like when that girl, if you see enough that when that person, that girl leaves, you see the other person having a reaction more just kind of like, yeah, all right, they're leaving. You know what I mean? It's like, and then that person's like, oh, I can't do that ever again because I have a boyfriend now. And you're like, okay.
You've also been able to disconnect, and we'll wrap up, but this is a good talk to talk about. We'll do another one soon because sure. I like doing these talks, dude. It's a little more, like I said, it's not Legion of Skanks. Legion of Skanks is a little more ADD. I think this, you know, I like having these conversations with you sometimes. And we have these conversations all the time. This is a phone talk. It's a phone conversation we would have. But you were able to disconnect earlier on as well. You had a joke about it in your act. It's kind of funny because just the weird line you have to toe of like getting off sexually and then watching some dude play your wife. But you've done that with other chicks in the past. You've been able to swap.
Oh, couple swap.
Couple swap. That's
a different world though than like threesomes.
Yeah, but even so, like you have to be able to disconnect to a certain degree, even to fucking have your chick eat out another chick.
Yeah.
It's not as hardcore. Look, having a big black guy penetrate your chick in front of you, it's a tough pill to swallow.
Oh, yeah.
Even if you're kind of into it, like, I mean, it's a fucking...
Yeah.
Because I'm a sexual deviant, and I can understand how that would be hot to watch my chick get fucked by a dude.
Yeah, sure.
While I'm fucking his chick. Like, I get that. Like, from a sexual standpoint, I'm like, oh, yeah, boom, that makes sense.
Yeah, I've never done a couple swaps, though, Chrissy, but I've done that in the past with girls. Yeah.
I'm suggesting that now.
Can we couple swap?
Do you want to fuck B? Can I fuck Christine?
It'd be funny. He goes, can you fuck B while I hire a black guy to fuck Christine? I'm going to jerk off to that whole thing. No, I get exactly what you're saying. No, it'd be, you're right, though. Even with chicks, like, you do have a disconnect. You know what I mean? Especially if you have a chick who's into that thing, you know what I mean? Then you're kind of like, maybe she's, like, into, you know what I mean? Maybe she's, like, thinks she's supposed to have a boyfriend.
Did she just whisper, this guy's a fat faggot? Meet me in an hour?
Get me away from this guy.
Get me away from him. He's awful.
That's what she whispers it into her pussy so she feels the words.
Help me. All right, dude, we're going to wrap up here, man. I want to thank you, Big J, my very good friend, for coming to do, or coming. I brought my podcast studio to you.
Put it all over here.
Thanks for doing the Real Ass Podcast. And this one will be out on Wednesday. So any dates coming up?
Fast turnover.
Any dates coming up? Anything you're going to promote?
Yeah. And I'm saying this on the Real Ass Podcast, and for the record, I'm getting annoyed with the visionless club bookers and people around this country that for some reason don't understand, if you let me bring Lewis and Dave or some combination of those two to these things, like, people come out.
Yeah. By the way, you know what? How about that? We'll start saying this on Legion of Skanks. Do me a favor. Hit up your local fucking comedy club. Say, hey, we want the guys from Legion of Skanks to come. And the truth is, a lot of these markets, Jay's already headlining.
I'm headlining. So sorry, if I go headline, I can bring Lewis and Dave with me. We figure out how to make that financially work. We do a podcast on the last day. I mean, I'm going to Philadelphia Helium in April. I got a bunch of stuff coming up. I've got the first weekend I'm doing Cap City in Austin, Texas. Next weekend after that I'm doing Helium Philly. After that Providence, Rhode Island, and there's something else after that. I don't remember. Foxwoods is coming up not too.
I'm with you, Foxwoods.
Yeah, I know. I love that, but it's just like It's a bummer, man. Like, to go on these road gigs and know it's like what we could do, especially when there's fans asking for you guys in every one of these cities, man.
Yeah, it's frustrating because you go the type of buzz that all like three of us. Yeah. It's like you'll draw your own people. I'll draw my own people.
Yeah, people come out for my show, and by the way, Legion of Skanks fans come out for me.
But
it's like we can make this like a let's not miss this event.
Exactly. Well, it's the type of thing where you'll go to Cap City.
I'm coming around every year. I'll be there every year.
Exactly. You were at Cap City last year. Maybe they saw you. They were like, you know what, dude? If it's between fucking Jim Jeffries and Big J, maybe they'll go to Jim Jeffries. But if it's between all of the Legion of Skanks and Jim Jeffries. That's what really we're saying, guys. Don't see Jim Jeffries.
I don't say anything. I love Jim Jeffries.
Stop over-explaining my jokes. I don't care. I meant that one.
Me and him just drank so much.
No, he's the best. Rabbits. Jim Jeffries. I'm a huge fan of Jim Jeffries. I'm kidding, guys. All right, let's fucking...
the Reddit sphere is wild. Jim
Jeffries. All right, guys, listen to me. This weekend coming up, I'm going to be up in Seattle, Washington, Tacoma, Washington, Yakima, Washington. Go to gomezcomedy.com. The 26th through the 31st, I'm going to be in Washington State. Then also April 17th and 18th, I'll be back at Joker's Wild in New Haven, Connecticut headlining. So make sure you check that out as well.
You have like every 3 months now.
No, I do twice a year. headline now.
Really? Yeah, oh, Dave was just there.
Yeah, Dave was just there.
Nice.
All right, Greg was there.
Greg?
Did you guys see Greg?
Who?
All right, guys, look, we'll check you next week. Real House Podcast. Peace.
That's all, folks.